bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello. Welcome to the photo show. Cheers as well, Alex. we're here to discuss the week's photography news and answer your questions, as we ever do. Chris Forsman's supposed to be here. He's not here. He may dial midway through. Who knows? And we're a bit late getting off, but never mind, eh? Joining me for the soiree through the photo news is Mr. Alex Fox. How are you doing, sir?
I'm very good, thank you very much.
A busy week.
Yeah, no one will let me go on holiday.
More crap today.
Yeah, but it's publishers or designers not doing their job and trying to pass the buck. I fired off a quick email that will probably get someone else to sack.
So. All right, jolly good. Shall we push straight into it then, the week in photography?
Yeah.
Tokina has released a 300mm lens. Now, Tokina, have you ever used them, mate?
A long time ago, and to be honest, I sort of thought they were the cheap and cheerful end of the market, but maybe they're not anymore.
Well, I've got to say, I used a Tokina lens that was an addition. Do you remember the old Sony disc cameras?
Yeah, I've still got one in the toy box.
Well, I had a Sony disc camera, and I had a Tokina interchangeable lens, or a screw-on lens for the front of it that was wide angle. And it gave you wide angle on the standard lens that came attached. I mean, it wasn't a detachable lens SLR or anything like that. And I had a Tokina lens for that, and it was very good. The quality of the glass was excellent. That wasn't bad at all. So this thing is a 300mm f6.3 mirror. It's now available in Europe, and it's a 600mm equivalent on Micro Four Thirds, 66cm rotund, 66mm rotund even, so it's pretty small. Fits on any Micro Four Thirds that you've got. It takes 55mm filters, focuses down to 0.8 of a metre as well, and gives you a 1-to-2 ratio on reproduction. So it's not really macro, but it'll give you a good close-up image. Price. Didn't see the price. Did you see the price on this?
Not on the article I've got.
Not on the article, no. So, Tokina, you're saying that you're seeing that they're pretty expensive these days.
Yeah, but they used to be. I'm trying to remember how much. I mean, I've only ever had one, and I can't remember it being. I always assumed it was cheap, unless I bought it cheap.
They were a relatively budget end. Do you remember Senton as well? Senton used to do cheap lenses.
Yeah, I think they were all the same company. They were just different badges they put on it to get you to buy more on one of them.
Well, the Senton stuff was always milled out of good quality steel, and it was heavy, and it worked extremely well. I had a Senton lens for an old Pentax that I was given, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, really, I mean, to be honest, if you look at modern glass, I mean, the grinding techniques have improved so much that even a fairly inexpensive, is the way to put it, lens can give you quite a good result. Whereas in the old days, an inexpensive lens, you got what you paid for.
Yeah.
You had to really spend big money to get a well-ground lens because of, you know, the wastage on a grinding lenses was massive. And nowadays with, you know, modern standards and modern technologies, I reckon you get 95% as good for a cheap grinding as you do for a very, very expensive one.
Yeah, I think that it's a very much more of a level playing field now in terms of lens grinding. I mean, you look at opticians have probably led the way in doing high street grinding.
Yeah. But, I mean, they've gone, not odd is the wrong way, but this isn't really a standard lens, is it? I mean, it's not the standard what you would call a 300mm lens for this type of camera. It's, you know,
well, you've always achieved the higher focal length though from with mirroring. I mean, there's a couple of comments in the chat room here. Ian saying, isn't that bit in the middle of the lens going to obscure things a bit?
That's how it works.
And Russ has put, what's the dot in the middle of the lens? Is that just for the cap? So this is a mirror lens, just to explain to anyone who's watching on the video podcast, you'll see this. The light goes down the outside and then bounces off a mirror at the back and comes forward onto another mirror at the front, which then sends it through a hole in the other mirror onto the sensor.
So which doubles the focal length.
Exactly. So your focal length is always from the center of your the optical focus, the optical midpoint of the lens is the millimeterage that gives you your lens focus for that. And then you're because you're pushing it backwards and forwards twice, you're extending that focal range. Now it's 6.3. So the other thing is the classic with mirror lenses is you can't get mirror lenses that go down to 2.8, 1.8, 1.4. And the reason being, if you try to open up the aperture that much, you get too much pollution from the light as it moves around. So you end up having to close it right down to get the light to stay sharp as it goes into the sensor. So you'll never get mirror lenses at that. You'll always be at 6.3. Typically, if you buy mirror lenses, they're f8, f11.
Yeah, about then. But it's not really what they're used for. They're not, you know, they're not intended to be something that, you know, lets in an enormous amount of light. I mean, if you think about the way it works, I mean, again, someone that knows technically more than me will argue, but my understanding is you also get double the aperture just for the fact that you've mirrored it anyway. So if you did make something that, you know, the aperture would be, you know, 1.8, you wouldn't get on 1.8, you get double that aperture anyway,
yeah,
or half, whichever way you want to look at it. So, I mean, 6.3 is not bad.
No, that's very good. I say normally mirrors are about f8, and that's where you start from. And if you stick a 2x converter on it, you're instantly up to f11.
Yeah, 6.3 is what, 3.4 to 4.5 sort of range, isn't it, on a normal lens? So, you know, it's not bad. It's not, you know, it's not like the cheap kit lens that you'd get with a camera.
Yeah, I mean, you're shooting at 6.3 though on the exposure, so you're going to get slower responses unless you're in very, very bright environments.
Yeah, but I mean, I can't even remember if this is right, because it has been, you know, it's not something I use. But my understanding of it, you do get slightly more light through in general anyway, because, you know, it's reflecting the light and various things. So it's slightly brighter anyway. But it's a strange thing. I mean, I suppose it makes sense that what they're going for is on the micro, or it's not micro, on the four-thirds sensors, what they're going for is to say, you know, we can give you a 600mm equivalent lens, but it's only going to stick out X, Y, Z. And, you know, the alternative would be to use a 2x converter on a rather large lens. So as it goes, this possibly is the best, if not the only reasonable option you've got to get a long lens on a four-thirds sensor. So, you know, it's a good idea. Don't know if it'll take off, because I don't think people in general trust them, especially as you can't do anything with the aperture because it's fixed.
Yeah, it's also manual focus as well. You're not going to get one of these that's a zip-zip.
No, all you need to do is stick it on a rangefinder. I mean, blimey, you need a degree in micro... some telescopic science to get the thing to work properly.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Micro Four Thirds fit on Wex to try and see if I can get a Tokina price. And they've got no Tokina lenses from what I can see for Micro Four Thirds. So let's just see a search on Tokina. There is Tokina lenses on Wex full stop, Nikon fit, Canon fit. And I would say they're probably not far off here. The main prices, I mean, 11-16mm f2.8 is 529, so that's a pretty good price. That's that's kind of Sigma-y. It's above Sigma. So yeah, they're not brand name prices, but they're a little bit above the norm for no names. If that's not being unfair.
Well, I've heard of them.
Well, I mean, you've got an f2.8 all the way up, 100mm fixed, macro lens. Now, the standard price for that as a Canon item is £700, and that's coming in at £374.
Yeah, so, exactly.
On Canon fit. And I may be £374 light by the end of the show.
It's not bad, is it?
And they got a 12-24 f4 on Nikon fit, £500. These aren't bad prices.
No, they're not.
Not bad at all.
Be quiet, Ewan.
Yeah, no. We could be Tokina fans by the end of the show. There we go.
Tell it. And slightly near a divorce.
BX2. We don't do camera bags much, and we should, because we're here not just for lenses and bodies. BX2 have done a series of camera bags, and the reason that I kind of looked at this and thought, oh, let's cover this, is normally anything that's got the word camera bag on it instantly has a $100 levy, a 2x levy on the overall price. And I thought the prices on these weren't horrific. mean, you've got a DSLR backpack there that will hold a 15.4-inch laptop as well as, and it's $180, so that's about 120 quid. That's pretty good, I thought, no? Have I lost the plot now?
It depends, isn't it? I mean, what did I buy? I bought a Lion Pro recently for about £80, but that was just because I had to go somewhere by train, and it was worth it to add it to the price of the job. But I've got Bellingham bags that start at 500.
Yeah.
And we're talking about bag. We're not talking about anything clever here. We're talking about a canvas or canvas and leather bag. It's quite incredible how much they are.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's quite incredible that people like me have actually paid for that.
The messenger bag's a bit pricey. It'll hold a laptop up to 15.4 inches. And it's
a messenger bag, price. Sort of the type of bag I'm talking about that yeah. I probably paid £500 or £600 for.
So, yeah, okay. Large shoulder case, $160. Actually, I thought the price was fairly decent. And the other thing that struck me as well is they look decent quality. They're in a stone grey colour. They're like a velvety finish on the top. And they look fairly decent. Where you get them in the UK, I don't know. I'm going to have to find out. But the correct name for them is Brenthaven. Brenthaven. So if you're in the market for a new bag, go and check these out. A guy called Tenex as well said that buy a bag, and I bought it the other week, and I haven't even used it yet. I'll be using it next week, though, because I'm going out with Gordy, taking some pictures. There you go. BX2.
I've got to admit, though, I mean, one of the things we should mention is, as much as camera bags are very expensive, and I'm not saying that anyone should go and spend a fortune on them, they're really worth having, because not only the organisation, but they really do protect equipment. So if you've got anything that's even vaguely valuable for you, it's an awful lot easier to carry one bag that, you know, it's designed for the job, even if it costs you. You know, you can get a really nice camera bag. I've got, like I say, I've got one there that takes a 17-inch Mac. It takes, I don't know, four lenses and a couple of bodies and everything. And I think I only paid about £80 for it. And I wouldn't want to jump up and down on it, but I probably wouldn't want to jump up and down on anything other than Samsonite. So yeah. It's definitely worth having.
I mean, I paid about £140 for my Tenba years ago, and it's starting now to show the wear. The strap's starting to pull away from the body, and there's gaps opening up in it. But that was, you know, I think if you go to a place like Calumet, are very good for that kind of thing, because you can walk on the right day. And there'll be a low pro bag there, or be the Tenba bag, or there'll be something really, really good quality. And they just decided, you know, it's been kicking around the storeroom for too long. It's got a dust mark on it, and they'll whop off 50, 100 quid, and it'll be ridiculous price that one day. So it's always worth getting in there and just checking out camera places like that, where they let you walk around the stuff. You go to Jessop's, it's all out in the back on the shelves, yeah. So you're never going to get it. Walk into places like Calumet.
Oh, I'll tell you, one thing to be careful of is when you do buy bags like this, or a tripod bag or anything, be careful that the straps are included, because some of them they're not, and you actually buy the straps separately. And there was one I picked up recently just because I needed a new tripod case, and I think they wanted 40 quid for the strap.
That's a good tip.
And I was like, you can stick that with a sun, don't shine. I'm not paying 40 quid for a strap.
As long as you hadn't already parted with the cash for the bag.
Yeah, exactly. But be careful.
Disclosure.
Because quite a lot of them don't come with it.
Disclosure, most definitely. A photographer here in the UK has settled over an issue relating to a team effort for his photography. He was a guy, I'm just trying to find his name, Tyson Sadlow, and he's run rights over 6 images of Karen Brady that he shot for a publication called Today's Business Woman. They printed it, and everything was fine and dandy. And then another publication, which was allied to them, came out called Oxygen 10, and it had a whole pile of the images in. The publishers were Oxygen 10, and they published it in the Bupa Health magazine. And he said, nope, you had no consent for that. And they said, well, it was a team effort, because they provided a couple of staff to help move stuff around, because he hadn't provided it. And the judges agreed that he was the creator, therefore they were his images. They were not a team effort. Any comments on this, Alex? I mean, it's just straightforward news, fairly, but a lot of people, when they take an image, aren't sure whether they own it or not.
No, I would say if you're, it depends how you're working. If you're working with a designer and you, there's like a hierarchical system when you go to a photo shoot sometimes. And if you're working on certain projects, you have a designer or you have someone from the company that's setting it up or moving people around, et cetera, et cetera. Then it's a joint effort. You sort of, unless you sign something, you agree basically to the fact that you're sharing the copyright or the ownership of the image. But in this case, it sounds like he was doing all the setting up, he was doing all the work, he was doing all the creativity, and all they were doing was he'd say, can you move that light over there, and can you move that background over there? Therefore, they were assistant rather than...
They weren't creative influence.
Creative.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he's won, but that doesn't mean I'm glad that every photographer wins every case, because in some cases, I think, you know... The creativity doesn't come. Quite often when I do things, the creativity isn't coming from me because of I'm, you know, it depends how I've set myself up on that day. But some days I've set myself up purely as the guy that will make sure that the light getting into the camera is at the correct exposure and the balance of the image is right. But someone else is there to do the creativity. Yeah. And that's their job. There's certain things I put my hands up and say, you know, you're the artist, if you like. You know what you want out of this. I'm not there to tell you what the best way to photograph your work is. You're the artist. You tell me. So therefore, you know, on those grounds, we share it. But there are people that say, no, I pressed a button, so therefore it's my image. Well, no, that's not quite how it works. But in this case, the guy was right, and they were right to...
I mean, the key part with this is if you look at model rights as well, because I mean, Brady fortunately loves this guy, and basically this guy is his photographer. He takes all her pictures, and she said that she backed him 100% in his fight for the rights over the pictures. Now, if she'd have been saying that the pictures were hers, that would be a different issue, perhaps. Then there's an awful lot more jiggery pokery about who's the creative influence, whether models give of their posing and so on that it, and helps create the image or not.
Depends if you paid the model as well.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But it then says that there's a great quote here from the judge. This is unlikely to be an issue with people who merely helped. However, a licensing agreement confirming that you retain copyright would always be preferential. This may be implied, but one signature is worth 1,000 implied terms.
And thousands of those pound things we talk about as well.
Do you think he's looking to be master of the roles there? A bit of Denningness in that.
Well, I think he's saying, look, just for the sake of signing a bit of paper on the back of an envelope, just get it organised.
This is my...
You know, the point is, he's a photographer, right? And if this is what he does for a living, which, you know, from reading the story, it's not the first time he's taken a picture, I'm quite surprised that he doesn't have a standard form that he just goes through before it's shot.
Mm.
You know, that I would have said... I think that's the judge's way of saying, look, you know, use your head. You do this for a living. Just go and get yourself something from the post office, get it written out, and then just get people to sign it before you start.
Absolutely. Canon. No, not Canon even. Nikon have released, they're still flogging the Coolpix range, even though I think it's an outdated node. They've got the Coolpix L810 has been out. It's a 16.1 megapixel, 26 times optical zoom. This thing really does fly when it comes to the zooming. And it retails at £167, although if you look on photography blog, they've found it at £159. So it's about £160. A great price, I think, for a start, no?
I think it's an amazing price. I really am.
Yes.
I sort of, when I looked at that, the first thing I did when I opened that is I didn't notice the price. And I looked at it and thought, well, that's a cool colour. Then I saw the 26 times zoom, and I was thinking, all right, I'm going to go straight for the specs. So I looked at those, and I thought, you know, a reasonable 16 megapixel, nothing too silly. It's got a fairly modern X-speed sensor on it and processor and everything. I thought, vibration reduction. The whole thing sounded too good to be true. But then I've got to admit, I went through a couple of sample images, and I thought, yeah, maybe it is a bit too good to be true. Because of, whoa, you know, it's unusual for me to say this, but the output on this thing isn't as good as
you would have hoped.
It could have been. But for £167, I was like, £160. I was thinking, you know what?
This
is probably worth £160.
The thing that struck me about some of the pictures on it is that if you use it as kind of like an ambient camera, Close up, certainly at 100%. A lot of the images really left a lot to be desired when you got up there. Mm. But the macro image isn't bad at all, and the zoom images aren't bad either. I mean, we've got a little picture here that you're not really going to get any scale of this, but it's the one at 22.5mm with the lens right back, and then it's zoomed right up to 585mm optical. And that zoomed image, it looks a long way away, there's no question. But for the distance that it's focusing on, that's not bad.
No, not bad at all. It's not. I mean, to be honest, the person that buys this is going to make, if they ever print it, they might print it at 10x8. And with the oversized, you know, the amount of pixels they've got over what they need, it's going to look pin sharp. Mm. It's going to look great. You're not going to see any aberrations or anything at all. So, you know, don't print this as a, what's a 16 megapixel camera going to give you, 16x10, maybe? Mm. Don't go up to 16x10 because you might notice it's getting a bit, you know, it's starting to go. But if you want to use this as a, you know, a small 16 or 26 times zoom camera that looks quite pretty, I don't think you're going to do an awful lot better at £160.
I think it's great value, definitely. I mean, the kind of things you're going up against here are Canon PowerShot, SX40, Fuji FinePix S4000, Fujifilm S1, and every single one of those cameras is more expensive than this.
Mm. And by quite it's funny, because when I first read it...
250-ish.
Yeah, when I first read it, I thought, I must have clicked the wrong one. That price can't be right.
Yeah.
That was my first thought.
But it's not. I'm going to buy myself a Tokina camera lens. I can see it coming. Last bit. Canon have unveiled a whole load of new Pixma printers. Four of them. The MP2230, which is £44. MG2250 at £49. MG3250 at £69. And MG4250. They're all A4 models tops. And they will print and copy and scan. We don't do a lot on printers either, really, because, I mean, I suppose printers are a bit difficult if you've never had a little play with them. And you can't really walk into a shop and have a go with them. But these things are wireless, and they're printed without having to switch the printer on as well.
So. Yeah. I've got a printer over there that I think I paid 400 and something pound for. No, it might be more, actually. It's it does everything. It's got duplex printing, it's got duplex scanning, it's got auto feed scanning, it's got wireless this and that and the other, and occasionally the kids print their homework on it, and that's all it ever gets used for. My objection to this printer and every single printer, home printer in the entire world, is I'd rather not pay £44 for it. I'd rather pay £244 and the ink not be offensively expensive.
Well, you say that, but actually, if you go to places like Silverline on Amazon, Silverline do fantastic repro cartridges, and they're ridiculous in terms of price. They're £1 or something like that. You buy 20 cartridges for £20 or £40, and it's
that's the well point. Worth them. You could buy those and put them in the cheaper model, and I've got to be honest, I've gone to the trouble before of boiling printer head cartridges and things, because if you don't use very good ink, they don't last. Mm. And it's a problem. But for £44, if you don't mind throwing away the printer every 6 months or a year, it's not a problem. But, I just find Canon work on the principle that they can more or less give this away as long as you're going to spend stupid amounts of money on ink. And, you know, it's all very well being in the know, but most people aren't. Most people just go, I need a Canon ink cartridge. I'll go to said high street store and I'll pay £20-30 for an ink cartridge. And I don't know. Is it more expensive than gold per ounce? Because it's got to be pretty close.
They reckon it's four or five times. So it's a lot more.
Yeah, it's more expensive than beer, and let's face it, what do we need more, ink cartridges or beer?
Beer.
Yeah, exactly.
No question. Do watch out when you're buying printers, though, because they'll start making resolution claims, equivalent resolution claims. They're all bull. Anything that's over 300, you ain't going to be paying £44 for it, and anything that's over 600, you're going to be paying a lot more than £100 for it. So do watch out for the small print there.
they are all 300 DPI printers, though, because that's what it goes in at. It doesn't matter how many dots it interpolates it out to. It's still only a 300 DPI printer.
Mm. There we go. Coolpix cameras are for persons who want big cameras with big lenses, but they can't afford one. Loads of people at Chelsea had them this year, says Russ.
let's out Russ. He's not talking about the Hard Man Football Club. He's talking about the Flower Show.
Pete says he uses a continuous ink supply system on his Canon printer, so that's presumably he's got some jugs on the wall with tubes going down into it. And Russ says, again, it's cheaper to get painting lessons than it is to paint the image yourself. It's got five individual 100mm external ink tanks. Sounds industrial. Well done, Pete. I like that. Let's do some questions. Your questions. If you'd like to ask us any questions, send them to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll put them in the show and we'll answer them. All the questions get answered. So even if we don't read it out, I always send a written reply back. This one's kind of a question, but it's going to take a bit of time there. It gets from Jim. Hi, Ewan. I finally come to the conclusion that you're right about the regarding the Leica M9.
Pauses for effect.
You'll probably have guessed that I bought a Leica M9 earlier in the year and I wanted to go for one for a long time and I had the means to buy one. I jumped at the chance, resulting in the M9 black along with a Sumerit M35mm 2.5 lens. Suit me as was purely camera without all the bells and whistles of the modern cameras today and had a full frame sensor that I wanted too. And but I wasn't impressed with the four-thirds of micro four-thirds cameras or lenses. Don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with the camera other than the fact I can't get used to the focusing screen, unlike my previous experience with manual focus on the Olympus OM-1N. So, what will I do with the money when I sell my camera equipment?
Buy a new car.
I still have the Fujifilm X-Pro 1 with the 18 and 35mm lens. Do I go for awkward cameras or don't I? But I have to say, it produces really good images. 60mm lens might be on the list, 90mm equivalent, or the new 35mm lens perhaps for it. I do fancy upgrading to the Retina 15 MacBook Pro with the latest SSD, but what does Alex think of the D800 as an option with maybe a few prime lenses? I don't regret buying the M9. I have lived the dream, except for the loss of a bit of money. So there you go. There's a question, mate. He's got rid of the M9. Should he take the leap and buy a D800 with a few prime lenses? I'm guessing he's not got any other lenses that are going to restrict him or hold him back.
What's the fully kitted out D800 is only about 2,500, isn't it? I'd get the extra battery grip, which is probably a couple of hundred, if not more. I mean, to be honest, the D800 is... It's a different type of camera to this M9. This M9 is, I don't know what you'd call it. I suppose it's an enthusiast's camera. And I mean that not by the skill level, by you've got to be pretty enthusiastic to spend that amount of money on a camera. The D800, I have played with it, and I think it's probably the most incredible camera I've ever played with at that price range, by a long way.
I'll be buying a bloody D800 by the end of today, not a talk.
No, it is an amazing camera. What they've produced in that camera is outstanding. One of the things you will find out, though, with a D800 is if you use average lenses, then you will get an average photograph out of it. The sensor is fantastic, irrelevant of which one you go for. The sensor is incredible, but to get the very most out of it, you need to spend some money on some good lenses. I would say go secondhand with good lenses and get, say, three rather than two. But it might take you a little while to get used to the Nikon after a Leica. But if you're willing to spend that sort of money, you could probably get... Yeah, I don't know about the Retina MacBook Pro because I played with that as well. And I've got to admit, I don't know what all the fuss is.
What's the point? Yeah, thank you. Honestly, as well.
I thought the screen was great. Now, my argument against the screen is purely the fact that as for a photographer, I can't see. And everyone says, "Oh, yeah, but you can get all this 100% on the screen." Well, that's really good, but I can't see dots that small, and nor can anyone else. So, I would say buy yourself, if you haven't got a MacBook Pro, buy yourself a, if you can still get hold of a 17-inch, get hold of a 17-inch MacBook Pro as a photographer. Forget about this Retina as a photographer, because it makes absolutely no difference to work on it whatsoever. Buy yourself D800 with a couple of lenses. You will not regret it, I promise you.
Good. I agree. Well, yeah, live the dream. Well done, Jim. Well done, mate.
I'm incredibly jealous.
Andrew Bailey writes in, hi, guys. I'm going to a small tropical island on holiday. I need to travel as light as possible. I've got a Canon T3i body and a 50mm prime and a 28-75mm zoom lens. Could I get away with just taking the 50mm without sacrificing any great pictures? I'll be taking landscapes and a couple of shots and all those usual holiday things. Is a 50mm a suitable enough all-rounder lens, or should I find room in the travel bag to take the 28-75? Great show, valuable and essential. Cheers, Andrew Bailey. There you go. What do you reckon, mate?
I mean, I don't tend to take much on holiday. I think on holiday pictures, I think zoom isn't as necessarily as important as a wide angle. So let me just go through the lenses he had again, because of
he's got a 50mm prime and a 28-75 zoom.
Well, I would have said, I would have said that's enough. But if you want to buy anything, buy yourself a cheap. I don't know what Canon do. Do they do sort of what do they do? 18-55. If you want to buy yourself a lens, go and buy yourself something like you know, a 3.5, 5.6, 18-200 or something like that, and that will cover it all. I wouldn't bother with the 50. Not if you, you know, on holiday.
Russ in the chat room was suggesting just take a compact camera and enjoy your holiday more than worrying about all your equipment, which there may be a point in that. I mean, the thing you've got with the T3i is it's a crop sensor. So at 50mm, you're actually shooting 75mm. But one of the benefits that you've got with the 50mm lens is to a certain degree, it's WYSIWYG. So what you see is what you get. You know, you look at your field of vision, and I'm not talking about the fact all the peripheral stuff here, but generally speaking, on a full-frame camera, at 50mm, what you see in front of your primary vision area is what you're going to get when you pull the thing up to your face. So you're not going to get that with a T3i unless you use the 28mm. And the 28mm is going to give you 42 equivalent. So if that's just a standard lens and not a DC lens, that's going to give you a 42 equivalent. I mean, that's the key part there as well, is if these lenses are full frame or whether they're a crop frame already rated.
Yeah, but I mean, don't take too many lenses with you on holiday. And to be honest, on holiday, one of the things you don't want to do is really take your lens off the camera.
Yeah,
because you're going on to a beach or something, that you could write off your camera within a half a second when the wind blows. So take one lens. If you can, take an 18-200 DC, as it is a crop factor, stick it on and don't take it off again until you get home.
I've got to say, I'd take the iPhone and be done with it, and that'd be it for me. I wouldn't worry about much else.
Yeah, but if you leave the data connection on, it could cost you as much as a D800 if you.
But if I had the choice of taking one of my lenses only, I'd take the 50mm 1.8, because you've just got so much versatility with that in terms of depth of field. And also, I mean, I shoot probably 80 to 90% of the images I get paid for, I shoot with that lens. So it's perfect. Last question. Greetings and salutations, says Greg. Thank you, mate. I've just found your show, really enjoy it. Another question. Are the Nikon or whatever 2x/3x converters worth a hoot? Also, will they work on a 70-300 zoom? What do you give up when you're using something like this?
The ability to take a sharp photograph.
So the first thing to say is anything that promises to go from 50-500, 28-300, 28-200, 70-300, the last quarter turn's pointless. So you're probably doing 70-200 effectively at reasonably sharp levels. Would that be fair? Or am I being over generous there?
Yeah, probably are. Now, I'll tell you what, I've got in there, and I keep trying to give it away and it keeps coming back. I've got 70-300 cheap lens, and I can't remember who makes it, and I stuck a 2x converter on it, and the autofocus is supposed to work, and I suppose it would if you had a black square on a white background, it might just about manage to find that. The usability, I mean, well, what are you talking about? 70 to 300, two times converter. Say that was on a crop factor lens as well. You're talking about 900 mil, and it just doesn't work. It does work if you use an expensive Nikon on a fixed lens, then it works quite nicely. If you start using zoom lenses and try and say, oh, I've managed to make a 900 mil lens, it's great, but it doesn't work. It's pointless. It's not only soft, you can't focus it. It doesn't work. Sorry. So you're probably better off buying a good quality converter and sticking to a fixed lens, because, you know, in my experience, it's practically a waste of time.
I'm going to assume that Greg's already got a 70 to 300, so he doesn't want to buy another lens. So could he buy a converter? Well, if you buy the standard Canon 2x converters will work with autofocus, but only on lenses at f2.8 or lower. So anything above f2.8, they won't. So if you've got a 70 to 300, the chances are it's probably a Sigma or a Tascam or something like that. Those are probably about 3.5 to 5.6 or even worse, 6.3. Alex?
Yeah, I mean, they're not very good. Yeah.
So you're instantly, as soon as you put a 2x converter on, Teresa in the chat room says you're going to lose light, right? You're losing two stops of light absolutely straight away. So even at the best, when it's zoomed right the way out at 70 millimeters, it can't be any better than 3.5. So it's going to go 3.5 to 4.5 to 5.6. So you're going to be at 5.6 before you even get any further. And if you're right the way out at the 300 mil, you're going to be up to f11. So, yeah. At f11, it better be damn well bright. You better be on the tropical island with Andrew if you want to get a really nice picture. Plus, also, you're going to lose on sharpness. And you're going to have lost manual autofocus for sure. If it works with it, it's pure fluke. Because the Canon ones definitely won't. Now, Jessop's did a 2x converter years ago, and I bought one, and there was something wrong with it. I don't know what it was that was wrong with it, but it works on autofocus, and it does an okay job as well. It was £64, and I think I bought it 20 years ago, and I think they made a batch wrong, but the autofocus works on it on a 70-300. If you want to buy it, I'll talk to you later.
Funny, I've got
be very expensive though.
I've got a Jessop's 2x converter that does autofocus.
Yeah, and they're not supposed to. They cocked up.
No, well, yeah, mine does, yeah. Which I was a bit surprised about. But, you know, it does. But like I say, you've got to be in the perfect situation for it to be worthwhile using.
Mm.
The alternative is a couple of £1,000 for a lens, so it's worth a go.
If you've got 70 quid burning a hole in your pocket, which is what it's going to cost you for a cheap 2x converter, and you're talking about $200 if it's going to be an expensive one, then you're better off going out and buying yourself a better lens. Go out and get yourself the 50mm f1.8 and shove that on. You'll get far more versatility and use with that. Yeah, okay, you won't be zooming in at 300mm, but if you take the 1.8 and you stick a 2x converter on that, you'll have autofocus and you'll have a 100mm lens straight away.
Mm. Yeah, there's ways and means.
It only goes 2.8.
Yeah, there's ways and means, but no, it's never going to be as sharp and it's never be as good. But, you know, it's a hundredth for the price, so
exactly.
What do you want?
This podcast and all the others wouldn't be possible without UK2.net, and I haven't got one of their logos yet again. I'm bloody useless, me. There we go. Please support them, because they support us. They have done now for 3 years, and we've just signed up with them for another 2 years. So they're loving us. They're loving you. You're buying loads and loads of stuff off them. The listeners from BTN are buying tons and tons of web-based stuff from UK2, domains, VPS, VPN, etc. And a lot of people are tweeting out saying it's effortless. It's dead easy to do. Please go to our website, britishtechnetwork.com, and sign up through there. Click on the link, go through, buy what you need to buy. Use the codes that are on the sponsors page on our website, and you'll get tons of discounts off them. Put the code in, hit return, put the code in, hit return. Don't put your payment details in until you've got your basket down to the lowest it possibly can be. And then pay off. And that's it. Great. Please support them. And also, if you want to sign into your account, use the British Tech website as well. That'd be really cool. Where can you get Mr. Fox?
You can get me, Alex G. Fox, on Twitter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for turning up and saving me from a fate worse than being on my own.
That's okay. I've got plenty to do now. So
good man.
Shall we get on with it?
I'm very grateful. We're going to be back again with the Mac Show in a few minutes, and we'll be back with a photo show next week. If you've got any questions for us or any articles you want us to review or talk about, then send them to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. See you in a few minutes. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.